All right, morning. Today's daf in Avodah Zarah, Lamed Aleph. We are starting today on the Gemara in Lamed Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud. We are four lines from the top of the Amud, starting with the words today, Tana Rabbanan, Yain Tosis. We're talking about fermenting wine. The two topics of discussion as it relates to wine is one is Yain Stam Yenem or Yain Nesach, and the other is Gilui. Gilui is something which the Gemara speaks about at length, and seemingly it's a little bit strange to us as we are we're not familiar with this kind of behavior where snakes just simply running after our wine and injecting venom into our wine. But in times of the Gemara, it was certainly a sakana, was certainly a danger. And so the Gemara therefore notes that there are a number of concerns and considerations when you have wine or water for that matter that was exposed, because the snakes may come in, and inject it in venom. And as the Gemara pointed out, this is, clearly falls under the category of sakana. It's a danger to our lives. The Torah says, "V'nishmartem esnaf shasechem." We have to be careful about our lives. We have to take care of ourselves. And so therefore, it's something that needs to be avoided. In fact, the Gemara yesterday had a line, such a great line in the Gemara yesterday, is that when it comes to sakana, when it comes to danger, so pirukala sakanta, you're going to give me terutzim for sakanas, meaning you're going to learn up sakana like you're going to learn up like a regular sugya. Meaning when we're talking about sakana, I don't want to hear answers. I don't want to hear, well, maybe in this case, maybe in that case, maybe it's a machlokas tanayim. In other words, when we're talking about sakana, obviously we're talking about our lives. And so the Gemara, it's a real concern that we need to be concerned with. Outside of just the regular Yisurim in the Torah, there's also a sakana consideration as well. With that in mind, so now with wine, you're treading lightly on wine, pun intended. You're treading lightly on wine, as there are now two concerns when it comes to wine. One is tam yenam, any wine that is handled by a guy is going to be aser, and the other is gilui. So these are the two concerns that we've been navigating throughout the Gemara in yesterday's daf, and we're going to continue to do so in today's daf as well. Just quickly, we just started the mission yesterday, so let me just quickly recap the issue of stam yenam and yain nesach. As we've learned yesterday's daf, if a guy were to actually take wine and use it as part of his idolatrous practices, so that's yain nesach. That's called using the wine for the libation of avodah zarah, and that is aser ba'achila, aser ba'hana, min ha-Torah. The Gemara linked it yesterday based on a whole bunch of hekeshim and gzeres shavas, but ultimately it's aser ba'achila u'vahana. And that is that's yain nesach. It's stam yenam. If, let's say, wine comes from him, and we don't know whether it was actually used for idolatry or not, so the Mishnah taught us yesterday that it's still going to be aser ba'hana, meaning that the gzeira derabanan is such where we are concerned that there will be it was used for yain nesach, and therefore it's going to be aser ba'hana. And this would be true, as we learned in yesterday's daf, this would be true not only if we're concerned that he used it for yain nesach, but even if he just handled it, even if he just touched the wine right in front of us, still there would be concern, and therefore it's going to be aser ba'hana as well. In fact, Rashi and Tosfos both point out yesterday. Well, Rashi says it clearly. We're worried about yain nesach. Tosfos also points out there's another consideration which is intermarriage as well. Meaning one of the themes throughout this parak of Gemara, and we're going to see it much clearer as we get to Daf Lamed Hey, is that a lot of these kinds of gzeiros were there to prevent over-socialization between Jew and non-Jew, which would lead to intermarriage. And so really, there is an underlying theme when it comes to Yistam Yenam, which is that if we drink together, so then we're going to socialize and get involved with each other even more, and it would lead to intermarriage. But on top of that, when it comes to wine, there's also can be yain nesach. Okay. So, we learned yesterday that wine that was used as libation is aser ba'hana. Wine that was not used for libation, but still handled by a guy, is going to be aser ba'hana as well, as a gzera derabanan. With that in mind, with that stated, so we continue now in the Gemara. We are on Lamed Amud Beis. We are four lines from the top of the Amud, Tana Rabbanan Yain Tosis. We're in the Gemara now, discussing and describing a wine that is fermenting. So in the fermentation process, so the Gemara says, it is not attractive to snakes. So, and that extends for how long? It goes for the first 3 days. So first 3 days of fermentation. So as it's fermenting, so the snake is not going to be attracted to it, and therefore no concern of gilui. If let's say the wine was soaked with a certain type of vegetable, let's call it a cress, So then there is a debate amongst the Amoraim whether or not snakes are or are not attracted to it. The Gemara brings in an opinion that there is no concern of Gilui, but the B'nai Gola people living in certain in certain areas of the diaspora, so they are more strict on this matter. That's only if there's no vinegar. But if there's some vinegar mixed in with it, so then this is unappealing to the snakes. That's the way Rashi explains the Gemara, is that vinegar is a snake repellent, if you will. Kutach HaBavli, we're now up to Kutach HaBavli. You're going to see Kutach HaBavli come up a number of times in our Masechta. Kutach HaBavli was a dip. It was a kind of a cheese dip that had the ingredients of Kutach HaBavli. If you look at Rashi over here, Chazaku Kechometz, it's like vinegar, it's very potent. Kedem Befarsh Be'lo Ovrim, Diavu Be'i, Ifushe Pas, Ve'nisiu Ve'dechava. So they put in, Rashi says, breadcrumbs, kind of like croutons, and thank you. It's kind of like croutons and some sort of milk. But anyway, it was a dip. So ein bo mishum gilui, because it was so potent, so snakes were not attracted to it. B'nei Gola nagubo iser. But again, in the B'nei Gola, apparently there are snakes like this as well. Amar Rav Menashe iis be nikura chayshina. Now Rav Menashe points out that if you see snake bites in it, so then you should be concerned. Meaning that means that the snake has been around and been in there and probably express some vinegar into it, so don't eat it. I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, I'm Shmuel. May tif tif ein bo mishum gilui. If it's may tif tif, Rashi describes it as follows. I have a barrel on top of another, let's say, jug or container, and it drips, and it keeps dripping in, and it produces this drip sound. In fact, the word tif itself is basically the word is what it sounds like. Thank you. Okay, everyone knows what I'm thinking. Okay, even though I can't say it, but you're right. The word sounds like what it is, and so that's what tif tif is. So if it's producing this dripping sound, so not only is it annoying to you and me, but the Gemara is telling us it's annoying to snakes as well. And once again, it's that noise is a snake repellent. I'm Rav Ashi v'hu David tif lahadi tif tif. Now Rav Ashi points out that it has to be a continuous drip, meaning if it just drips, but with infrequency. So that doesn't prevent the snakes from coming. The snake repellent is only going to be when it's a continuous drip. I'm Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, I'm Rav Shmuel, Pita Eina, Ein Bo Mishum Gilui. So if, let's say you have a fig, you pick the fig off the tree. Now, it has a little bit of an opening, so there is now an opening for the snakes to come and take a bite out of the fig. Meaning, the Gemara kind of assumes that if the fig is whole and intact, the snake is not going to come and pierce it from the outside. But once it's open, so then it may be inviting to the snake. So the Gemara tells us as a chiddush that the pita eina is not subject to this kind of concern. Kamaki aitana detanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa, Rabbi Lazar Omer, ochel adam anavim betenim, balayla veina choshesh mishum shenemar, shomer pesayim Hashem. Person can eat grapes and figs at night, can't see what he's eating, but still, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over foolish people, and even though we don't know for sure that a snake didn't inject venom, but it's just a chance, then Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over us. Right, just an interesting idea, shomer pesayim Hashem. Meaning, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches us over us all the time. Ways that we know and ways that we don't know. But the Gemara points out that if there is, you know, a slight concern, so then you could say Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over. I can think of a couple of places where it comes up in more contemporary poskim, but the one that just is so interesting, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to wipe yourself after going to the bathroom with anything that's flammable. That's the halacha in the Gemara. You know, back in the good old days, they used to use stones in order for hygiene purposes, post bathroom. But anyway, but obviously, you know, for years, for generations, we've been using toilet paper, and that's obviously something which is flammable. Keneged the halacha, keneged the Gemara. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes over there in the beginning of Aruch Chaim, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, Akash Baruch watches over us. Meaning, we do it, it's slightly foolish in that we shouldn't, but, okay, in other words, and then of course, the question of course begs, like, how far does that extend out? Meaning, at what point can you say Shomer Pesayim Hashem? So, okay, but anyway, the Gemara says it over here regarding a small chance, a small possibility that a fruit will be injected, infected with some venom. Amar Rav Safra Mishum Rav Yeshua Derama, Shlosha Mine Erethain. So there are three different types of venoms, which with three different types of viscosities. Bachur Shokeh Shobeinim Efafeh V'shal Zakein Saf. So the Gemara says that depending on the age of the snake, so that's how dense the venom is. A young snake's venom is dense, and therefore it's going to sink right to the bottom. Middle-aged snake's venom is less dense and therefore hangs around somewhere in the middle. And the old snake, so his venom is really like, it's light, and therefore it floats on the top. And therefore, but basically what the Gemara is going to teach us is that as far as venom being injected into a liquid, where the venom could be in the liquid, it could really be anywhere. In other words, it could be on the bottom, it could be in the middle, it could be towards the top. Now, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. You're telling me that as the snake gets older, it gets weaker. But I have another tradition. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Three things that they get older, they get stronger. The fish, the snake, and the pig. They get older, they get stronger. So the Gemara says, that's true. But zihiri kolish. The Gemara says it's not a stira, meaning in terms of their strength, the body strength continues to get stronger. Right? We were just visiting the farm during the winter break. So reptiles, they just grow and grow. They don't stop growing. And they just continuously grow until whatever. So, I know the Gemara only here points to a nachash, but still. So in terms of their physical body strength, so that just continues to improve and strengthen. But in terms of their eris, in terms of the venom, so that weakens. It's not a steer. The Gemara says, Shabachur shokel amai hilchasa detayin chavish nizgal alfa pisha shasu mimenu. Tisha v'lamesu lo yishtu mimenu asiri. Gemara says, look, it actually plays out as practical halacha. Let's say, for example, venom was inserted into a drink. 9 people drank from it. It must be okay, right? In other words, 9 people drank from it. That's exactly the point. Because there are some venoms, specifically that of a young snake, that's so dense it just sinks right to the bottom. So 9 people can drink from it, and the venom was on the bottom. Now, you happen to be the shlamazel who's going to drink now and sip up that venom that's on the bottom. So obviously that's the kind of nefashos. And the Gemara says, V'kachaya, this has actually happened. Where 9 people drank from something, it was fine, and then the 10th person drank and he died. And now the Gemara says, now we understand. Because the venom was there, it was just simply on the bottom. I'm Rav Yirmiya Zer Shokea. So Rav Yirmiya says, that's right. In other words, what happened was it sunk to the bottom. V'chein avatiach shin isgalta. And the same thing says the Gemara regarding an avatiach. You have a watermelon, or any melon, that you opened it up. And so therefore, it's moist. And again, it attracts a snake. And alpha pishachl mimenu tes b'nei adam. 9 people eat from the melon and they're fine. And you're thinking, well, they're fine. I should be fine as well. And it's not true. And again, it's the same explanation. Venom was inserted because of the density of the venom. It went down to the bottom of the melon. And you're going to now be eating it. And the Gemara says, and again, the explanation is because the venom sunk to the bottom. Tanu Rabbanan. So now you have Mayim Shinizgalu, you have exposed water. This exposed water now has a real possibility, again, Bismana Gemara, has a real possibility of having venom in it. So now we're talking about disposal of hazardous waste. Okay, and even to this very day, right, you have hazardous waste, so you don't simply just, you don't leave it out for the garbage to take, but you got to take care of it. You got to dispose of it properly. So now we're talking about disposal of hazardous waste. So what do you do with this water? So don't pour it out to the Rishus HaRabim. Rashi over here writes, you pour it out to the Rishus HaRabim, people are going to be walking there. Rashi, I'm going to read the Rashi. Shema Yavor Adam Yachaf. The person is going to be walking the Rishus HaRabim barefoot. V'yamur ha'aris ben kishri etzbosav. And now the venom is just sitting there between his toes. The kevin shenichnas ma'at. And now, basically, it's going to get injected into his feet, and then and through his body, and he's going to die. So, in other words, so don't take this water now and throw it out into the Rishus HaRabim. Don't use it now to literally sweep your house. You know, back then they had dirt floors, so basically to keep the floor down, so to say, and not to dust up. So they used to sprinkle water on the floor in order to keep the floor down. And so don't use this water. Same explanation. Also, don't use it for pottery. Don't give it to drink to your animal, to your friend's animals. Don't wash your hands, feet, and face with it. Now, the Gemara says like this, according to the Acherim of this Braisa, if it's a part of your body that has like kind of like a crack, like an area where it pools. So the Gemara says, that part of your body can't put it there. Because what's going to end up happening is that the water is now going to stay there with the venom, and then it's going to seep into your skin. But if it's an area where it just runs off your body, so then that would be fine. In other words, Rashi says over here that if just very quick topical contact, so that's not going to affect you. In other words, it has to sit on your body in order for it to affect you. Now, Acher Ma'ayinu Tanakama, the Gemara says, really, there's no difference between the Shita of the Acherim and that of the Tanakama. Ikabana, the Gemara says, no, there is a subtle difference. Gaviyad v'gavirego v'rumne da'ape. So the Gemara says, look, the back of the hand, back of the foot, and your, like, the flat surfaces of your face. Meaning those areas, according to the Acherim, it would be mutter. Because, in other words, it's only areas on your body where it pools. As long as it's not pooling in that area, so then according to Acherim, it would be fine. Tanakama is more concerned and more careful and would not even allow you to apply to these areas of your body. So the Gemara over here now notes that there's a stira. This now, possibly venomous water. So who can you feed it to? Not your animals and not to your friend's animals. There's another brisa that says that you are allowed to feed it to your animals. The Gemara says, Kitanya ila shunra. So the Gemara says, cats. Cats can drink it. Cats are, generally speaking, immune to this kind of venom, and therefore no concern to give in to your cats. Well, if it's good for your cats, why wouldn't it be good for your neighbor's cats? So the chaver kachish. So Gemara says, well, it's going to weaken your neighbor's cats. The de nami kachish. Well, that means it's going to weaken your cat. Hadar bariya. Yeah, but it's only a temporary weakening. Generally speaking, the cats, you know, they'll get a little bit knocked out by the venom, but they'll recover. So the Gemara says, the chaver nami hadar bariya. So the Gemara says, yeah, but same thing with your friend as well. What's the difference between your cat and someone else's cat? Zimnan debay lezvuni umafsi lemine. The Gemara says, look, as far as your cat is concerned, you know when you're going to want to sell your cat. So if you want to give it this venom water and get it knocked out for a little bit, that's your prerogative. However, if it's your friend's cat and you give them the venomous water and now they get knocked out, maybe your friend wanted to sell it. And now your friend's not going to be able to sell it because, you know, the cat's like kind of like woozy and you know, trying to sell the cat on the market. And okay, so I don't know what the cat market looks like anyway, but still though, you are temporarily disabling him from selling his cat. Let's continue. We're in the Gemara now. We're in the bottom of Lamed Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. I'm Rav Aski, I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum, Rav Yehuda ben Beseira. So the Gemara has the following Mesorah, going back to Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, Shlosh Yenos Hain. There are three different types of wine. Yain Nesach. So we start with category number one. Category number one is Yain Nesach, Mamish, taken by an Ovid of Odazara, and used it as libation for his idolatry. So, Asa Bahana Matame Tomas Chamura Bechazayas. So, one, it's Asa Bahana. And as we already learned in the beginning of this parak, Minatara, it's Asa Bahana. Needless to say, it's Asa Bahachila, but it's also Asa Bahana. You can't get benefit from it. And in terms of its ability to contaminate, meaning to be Matame, it's Matame Tomas Chamura Bechazayas. Meaning it's going to be treated like a mace. We already learned in the beginning of this of the parak that anything that's Takrovis of Rodazar is considered Zivchei Mesim, and therefore compared to a mace. And as a result of that, it has now the status of a mace. Rashi on the bottom of the Amma, the last Rashi. Masa v'ol kemace. It is going to be metame both in carrying and also being under the same roof. It goes without saying, Rashi doesn't mention maga because it's pashut. Meaning it goes without saying, obviously, physical contact with it also. It kishas takroza v'odesko chavim lemace. So Rashi says, based on the hekesh that we learned at the beginning of this perek. Okay, so that's one. One is yain nesach itself. Two, we now are on the very top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, Stam Yenam. Stam Yenam is Asar Bahana. One is now allowed to get benefit from it. Stam Yenam. Or Metame Tumas Mashkin Berevius. Now, it's not going to be a source of Tuma, but it will be susceptible to Tuma. This is the way Rashi explains the Gemara over here. In fact, if you take a look at the second Rashi, Metame Tumas Mashkin, Metame Tumas Ochlin Mashkin, Kitoras Mashkin. Tuma Sherit She'enu Metame Adam Vekelem, Ela Ochlin Umashkin. It's going to basically be treated like any other liquid. Any other liquid which is receptive to being Tameh, so too this Stam Yenam is going to be considered receptive to be Tameh. And finally, number three, and finally, let's say I give my wine over to a non-Jew, and I say, do me a favor, watch this for me. I'll come back and I'll pick it up a week from now. So when I come back and pick it up a week from now, so it is mutter bahana, but I can't drink it. In other words, because the assumption is, the concern is that he handled it, that he touched it. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second, this last halacha is the one that's going to bother us. Because this last halacha says that if I deposit my wine by him, so the concern is that he's going to handle it, he's going to touch it, and we can even go a step further. Maybe he'll even replace it with his own wine. Looking at your wine looks delicious. You know what? I'll give him my wine and then I'll sub out with his wine. If all this is a concern, so I don't understand. What did we just say regarding deposited wine? We said that it is aser ba'achila but motar ba'ana. Why should it be motar ba'ana? If we're concerned about replacement, so then it's his wine, so then it should be aser ba'achila and aser ba'ana. Gemara asks effectively this question. Vatanan, the Gemara here quotes a Mishnah. If you deposit your fruit by a goy, so basically, you know what you're going to have to treat this fruit? You're going to have to treat this fruit like his fruit. Meaning to say that it's very possible that he looked at your fruit, thought it to be delicious, and basically ate it and replaced it with his own fruit. So now what you're picking up no longer is your fruit, but it's your, but it's no longer your fruit, but it's rather his fruit. And so the Mishnah tells us that we have to be worried about hachlafa. We have to be worried about substitution. So ask the Gemara basically the following question. Over here, in a categorizations of wine, we had yayin asech, we have stam yainam, and we had deposited wine. And we said that regarding deposited wine, it's aser be'achila, but mutar ba'ana. Why should it be mutar ba'ana? Shouldn't we be concerned that he basically replaced it with his own wine? Answers the Gemara, kagon sheyichin lo keren zavis. So the Gemara suggests, oh, I know, maybe we're talking about a scenario in which not only did you deposit the wine by him, but you set aside a corner in which the wine is going to be kept. And Rashi points that over here. It's not just a corner of the house, but in other words, under lock and key. So in other words, you deposit in his property, but in a safe area where you have the lock. So the Gemara says, oh, wait a second, says the Gemara. So I don't understand. So it's on his property, but it's under lock and key. And you're holding the key. So should be fine. Meaning he didn't touch it. So the Gemara says, "Dahar Rabbi Yochanan ikla la parvada marklum yesh mishnas bar kapara." The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yochanan went to a town where the town of Parvad, and he says, "Anyone know that was anything that was taught by bar kapara?" To which the Gemara's answer is, "Tana le Rab Tanchun de min Parvad hamafki yaino etzav kochave motar b'shtiyah." That if you deposit something by a guy, wine by a guy, so you can take your wine back and you can drink it. So kari aleha. So when Rav Yochanan heard this psak, so he said, "Makum sheyipol eish sham yehu," that the place where the tree fell, that's where the tree is going to be. That's a pasuk in Kohelis. And the Gemara asks a simple question: what do you mean that the tree is going to be there? If it fell, the tree ain't there. So sham yehu sakadat chayla sham yehu peirosav. So no, it means that even though the tree is no longer there, but the fruit of the tree is still there. So even though Bar Kapara is no longer living in the town of Parvad, but in other words, his teaching is still there, and people still know what he said, and people remember the shirim that he said. Good. So so we have now Rav Yochanan saying that. So that if you deposited something by a guy and it was under lock and key, so you can take it back and you can drink it. So what do we have right now? We have a problem. So in other words, on one hand, we said that if you're depositing wine by a guy and you're not picking it up, so it is mutter bahana b'tasa b'achila. On the other hand, we just quoted in the name of Bar Kapara. In fact, it's Rabbi Yochanan who learned this in the name of Bar Kapara, that if you deposit the wine by them and you pick it up, you can drink it. So that represents a problem. So Amar Rabbi Zera. So the Gemara quotes now the Bishim Rav Zera Lokasha. Ha Rabbi Laza ha Rabbanan. So in terms of whether or not wine deposited by a guy and you pick it up by a guy, can you drink it or can you not drink it? Subject to a machlokus tanaim, hatanya. I'm sorry. Rav Reb Lazar Rabbanan did tanya, because we learned in the following brisa. Echad lokech ve'echad asocher bais bechatzer shol v'kochavim o malu yayin o mafteach o chosam b'yad Yisrael. If I have a courtyard of a non-Jew and I used it as a storage area for my wine, and it's under lock and key, and I'm holding the key, Rav Lazar matir v'chachamim osrim. So Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana, says that it's mutter, and the Chachamim say that it's aser. Rashi says that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana says it's mutter, says Rashi, af pishtia, meaning you're allowed to drink it. Meaning it's locked, you're holding the key, it's fine. The Chachamim say it's aser. What does that mean, aser? Rashi explains. Meaning aser, meaning you shouldn't do it. Meaning you should not leave this wine under the care and under the ownership, not ownership, but under the auspices of the non-Jew. And now, so you shouldn't do it. And now when you come and you pick it up again, even though it was under lock and key, and even though you were holding the key, it is aser ba'achila. It's mutar ba'anah, but it's aser ba'achila. Or I should say better, b'shtiyah. Amr b'chia b'reid, or b'chia b'nachmin, amr b'chista amr rav, v'amr le amr b'chista amr zir, v'amr le amr b'chista amr li abba barchama, hachi amr haziri, alacha k'rebi Eliezer. So as far as the Tanaim are concerned, so even though, generally speaking, we follow the rabbim, and generally speaking, Rabbi Eliezer's shita is not one that is normally accepted as normative practice, as normative halacha, but still, here the Gemara says very clearly the halacha does in fact follow like Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore, if your wine is being held by a ovikochavim, but it's under lock and key, and you're holding the key, so then you can go, you can pick it up, you can drink it, it's mutar b'shtia, and certainly mutar b'hana. Right, meaning, yeah. I mean, right. Rabbi Elazar's shita is a little bit easier to hear. Maybe. Okay, and it could be, as we're gonna note in the Gemara in just a moment, there are certain chumras that they have by Sam Yenam and Yai Nesach. So we're going to talk in just a moment about a double seal. Generally speaking, in halacha, in order to ensure that it wasn't tampered with, you only need a single seal. But when it comes to stam yenam, so you need a double seal. So in other words, generally speaking, there's a tendency to be machmir. I know that's not a wonderful explanation, but it could be that that's also behind the chacham. Amar Rebbe Elazar, hakol mishtamer bechosim echad. Oh, here we go. Okay, here we go with the seal. Right, no, it's not. Right, but Sam Yenam is not ownership. Sam Yenam is no, content.
If the guy goes to the Jewish wine, the wine owned by a Jew is Nitfasul of Kaganov, he's afraid of him. But when the wine belongs to him, it has a different halucha. It's more chumar.
Okay.
Ta'ayen Shalakim and Hamaf Yeno is two different haluchas. Who owns the wine?
Okay. We're talking about wine. Right now we're discussing.
That we said is halacha of blazer is by mafkid.
Right.
Wine belongs to yid.
Right.
Stam yenam, the wine belongs to goy.
Stam yenam would even be if the wine is owned by a Jew and he puts his hand in it. Stam yenam. In fact, the Gemara later on are going to discuss this. Okay. Amar Rebbe Elazar, how come mishtamer bechosam echad? Chutz min hayayin she mishtamer bechosam echad. So everything is going to be everything will be protected with one seal, except for yayin, which is not going to be sufficient if you put one seal around it. So in other words, generally speaking, you want to know something's kosher and not been tampered with. So one seal is enough in order to make something tamper proof. But when it comes to stam yenam, so you need a double seal. Rav Yochanan ma'afil yayin mishamer bechosam echad. Now Rav Yochanan seems to be mekel. Rav Yochanan says no, even by wine, I only need one seal. V'lo pligi haber akarabi Eliezer hakarabanan. And the Gemara says really. There's no machlokas. It's a funny line of the Gemara. There's no machlokas. Meaning, we know how to resolve this. We know how to explain the two sides of it. One is holding like Rabbi Eliezer, and the other one's holding like the Chachamim. Meaning, Rabbi Eliezer, who tends to be mekel. Meaning, we just saw a moment ago that according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you deposit your wine by a guy, and it's under lock and key, and you're holding onto the key, that's fine. So, and when I say fine, I'm meaning that you could pick up the wine and you can both get benefit from it and you could drink it as well. According to the Chachamim, no. Once you deposit it by a guy and it's no longer under your watch, even though it's under lock and key, so you pick it up, you can't drink it anymore. So in other words, do I need a double seal or do I not need a double seal? So the Gemara says it's simply reflective on these two positions of whether or not you hold like Rabbi Eliezer or whether you hold like the Chachamim. Yeah, correct. Igad Amri, now the Gemara says, another version of this discussion, Amar Rav Elazar, Akol Mishtamer Bechosam, B'so Chosam. So everything would be good if it's one Chosam within another Chosam, Chutz Min Yayin, Shei Mishtamer Bechosam, B'so Chosam. Even if it's one seal within another seal, so by Yayin Nesach, that's not going to be good enough. Rav Yochanan Amar, Afil Yayin Mishtamer Bechosam, B'so Chosam. And Rav Yochanan says no, that even wine would be considered tamper-resistant, tamper-proofed, if as long as it's one seal within another seal. And the Gemara goes on to explain. V'tarvai karabanan. And now these two positions are holding within the sheet of the Chachamim. Meaning the sheet of the Chachamim, who tends to be more machmir? Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, under lock and key is enough to make sure that it's ensure that it's not going to be tampered by the guy. But according to the Chachamim, who are more machmir? So now the question, what is good? I need more than just simply one lock. I need a double lock. Would it be good enough if I had a seal within a seal? That's the machlokus within the sheet of the Chachamim. But in other words, they're both holding like the Chachamim. Mar Sav Ki Pliga Rabban Allah the Rabbi Lazar Bechosim Echad, Ava Bechosim Beso Chosim Shari, Mar Sav Rafi Lechosim Beso Chosim Asri. And that, the Gemara says, exactly is the machlokus. Meaning they, as long as the starting point is that you hold like the Chachamim, so if that's a starting point, so now I know that one seal is insufficient, and now a seal within a seal, is that going to be good? The Gemara says, that's exactly the machlokus. The Gemara says, okay, conceptually, I get it. But can you give me some examples of what it looks like? What does chosim b'sor chosim look like? The Gemara is going to give a number of examples. I'm a Rava, igne depum de chavisa, shrike v'chasime, have a chosim b'sor chosim v'ilola. Example number one of the Gemara is like this. Let's say I have some sort of jug, and I put a lid on top of it. It's not necessarily a form-fitting lid, but in other words, I put a lid on top of it, it covers it, and now I put a seal around it, right? Some sort of heat adhesion, so it seals it around it. So that's considered one chosim. And then on top of that, I write an inscription in that seal. That's chosim number two. So that would be one example of chosim b'so chosim. Example number two of the Gemara, dikula mehadik have chosim b'so chosim. Let's say I have a dikula, I have a basket, and I put the basket over the barrel, so it's now tight fitting over the barrel. So I have a chosim b'so chosim, meaning the barrel is already sealed. That's one chosim. Then the basket that I put on top of it, that's your second seal. And then if it's a tight seal that the basket forms over the lid, so that's good. So b'so chosim lo mehadik lo chosim b'so chosim. However, when the basket that goes on top of the barrel is not tight sealing, that's not considered your secondary chosim, and therefore it's not good. Another example, says the Gemara. Node bidiskaya. Chasimus pivlamata avichosim beso chosim, pivlamala lo avichosim beso chosim. Let's say I put one flask into another flask. Putting one flask into another flask may be considered chosim beso chosim, but the Gemara says, but it has to be under the certain circumstances, under the following circumstances. The inner flask is now face down, meaning the opening to the inner flask is face down, and the outer flask now is face up. They're both tied, and this is considered chosim beso chosim. Meaning that if somebody now wants to get into the wine, he's going to have to open up the first flask, then reach in, get the second flask, turn it around, open up that. That's considered chosim b'so chosim. V'chichayv pum elegav v'tzayr v'chasim v'chosim b'so chosim. Gemara says, I can also do it where the both openings are facing up, but I can still make it chosim b'so chosim. How? Says the Gemara, the way I could do it is by first knotting the interior flask, then knotting the exterior flask separate of that. So in other words, in order to penetrate, in order to get in, I'm going to have to untie both separately. If, however, let's say both openings are facing up and they're both knotted with the same knot, so then obviously that's not considered chosim b'so chosim. So the Gemara says over here that if you subscribe to the position that I need chosim b'so chosim, the Gemara just gave four different scenarios in which it would work out. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara continues, B'rishona yomim yanshal ir. I'm sorry, Yanshal and Kushi Asumimne Birasrika. Okay, a whole bunch of places that we're not familiar with, but the Gemara says that because these towns are contiguous to one another, so therefore I have to be concerned that there was they transferred wine from one to the other. One place is where Kusim lived, the other place is where Gaim lived. Kusim were not careful about Stam Yenam. And so therefore, we have to be concerned that all the wine may be Stam Yenam. So, Tanu Rabbanan Bishona Yom Mimyan Shal Ein Kushi Asum Mimnei Birasrika, Vishal Barkas Asum Mimnei Kfar Parshai, Vishal Zagdur Asum Mimnei Kfar Shalom. Okay, so three different communities that you have the Kusi town next to the Akum town. So that's what they said originally. Chazru Lomar, Chavis Psuchas Asuras Tumas Mutaris. But then, a turn on the Psak of whoever the author of this Tana is, and he says no. Eventually, what they ended up saying is that nah. When it comes to closed barrels, it's fine. When it comes to open barrels, so then it's a concern, then it's a problem. So, we start off by saying that all the wine in these communities are no good because of their proximity to the idolatrous communities. And then they said closed barrels are fine, open barrels are good. Where was the starting point of this discussion? Where's the end point of this discussion? And the Gemara discusses. Mi'ikara, my sover, love itself, my sover. What happened? Where's the change of thinking? Meikar savar ein kusi makpid amaga ove kochavim loshna pesuchos loshna stumos. So the original position was, as far as the kusim were concerned, like we've said already a number of times throughout this masechta, kusim are Jews, they're converts, but in terms of their attentiveness to halacha, they sometimes are really attentive and sometimes they're inattentive. So here, when it comes to the wine touched by a guy, so it didn't bother them so much. So originally the thinking was, look, the kusim community is right next to the idolatrous community. And over here, the idolaters are going to come in, they're going to just simply touch the wine, and the kusim don't care. And so basically now what you have is a contamination of all these wines, because the kusim don't care. That's what they originally thought. So mikarasavra kusi amakbid al mago v'kochavim loshna psuchos v'loshna stumos. Ule v'sof savar ki lo kapid a psuchos astumos makbid kapid. But then we investigated a little bit more into the behavior of the kusim, and we saw that if the barrels were open, the kusim don't care. In other words, the goyim will come in, they'll touch the wine, they don't care. But if the barrels are closed, for reasons which, whatever the reasons may be, there the kusim are going to put their foot down. Don't open that barrel, don't open that lid, don't touch the wine. Fine. Vistumas mutars verminu, the Gemara says, now on that, I'm going to ask a stira, as we now turn to Lamed Alpha Mid Beis. Hashalech chavish shal yain biyad kusim v'shal tzir v'shal murias biyad ovekochavim im makar chosma v'sasma motor v'im lav aser. So if wine was transported in the hand of a kusi, or for that matter, tzir, or for that matter, murias was shipped over in the hands of an ovekochavim, if you recognize the seal, you're good. If you do not recognize the seal, so you're not good. So over here now in this brisa, what comes out really clearly is that even as wine is being transported, this is wine in a closed barrel, wine is being transported by a kusi who's a Jew, unless it's sealed, we can't drink it. So Amar Abzer Lokasha Kam Beir Kam Bederech. So the Gemara first gives an attempt to explain this and says, well, it depends on whether or not it's within the city or whether it's on travel. In other words, in the city, so they're going to be careful. And the kusi is not going to allow a guy to touch his wine if it's in a sealed barrel. But once they're traveling, unless it's sealed, the kusi is not going to care so much. So the Gemara says that answer seems to be an incomplete answer. How do you think the wine got here? Meaning the wine right now currently is in the city. Probably was not manufactured over here. We're talking about the city. It's an urban area. Probably was manufactured somewhere else and therefore was transported over here. And if the transporters are kusim, so then we should be concerned, meaning the kusim on the road are not going to be so careful with the wine, and therefore they're going to allow a guy to touch the wine, even in a barrel. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Your answer didn't really answer the question. Elam Rav Yirmiya ben Akiza Shanino Kim Dekule Amma Afche Mirsas Amar Hashta Ichaze Le Misadili. So the Gemara says, Rav Yirmiya's answer is as follows. When you have a kusi, and we're talking about his cellar. His cellar, where now, you have so many people walking past, and the kusi now knows that, look, if anybody sees a guy coming into my winery, and they're going to see a guy now open up the barrel, put his hand in, stick his hand in, and now transform my wine into stam yenam, I'm going to lose all my business, I'm going to lose all my wine. So if we're talking about where the season is the wine season, and he knows that he's looking at a significant financial loss if anyone were to touch it, so therefore he would be concerned. Says Rav Yirmiya, that's what we're talking about over here. That answers our question. If I may go back for just a moment, Rashi on the top of the Amud goes on to explain that wine being transported by a kusi, goes without saying, says Rashi, is the same halacha would be true if the wine was transported by a guy. But in other words, but the chiddush, of course, is that even though it was transferred by kusi, still the kusi is not worried if a guy were to come in and were to handle the wine. And again, the handling of the wine would render the wine to be stam yena. Tzir and murias. Rashi, I didn't explain this, but let's take a moment. The transport of tzir and the transport of murias, meaning wine, we understand. All you need is a guy to touch the wine, and the wine is rendered aser. But in other words, what's tzir? What's murias? How? What's the concern over there? So you take a look at the second Rashi. And Rashi explains, v'shel tzir v'shel moriz b'yadov kechavim, tzirich hakaras chostam. So there you need, it needs to be sealed. Well, why do these food items need to be sealed? Because Rashi says, af agav delav orcha lemir min bechamra, didimei ayami kari mishel tzir. Now, it's true, says Rashi, that you're not going to put in wine into these items. And like we discussed just a day ago in the daf, meaning if you have a food where wine is part of the ingredients, that too is going to be a concern of stam yena. Rashi admits over here that wine is not part of the tzir. However, miu, chayshinan dilma machlik le b'tzir shal dagim tamei. There, by the tzir, we're worried that it's going to be swapped out for non-kosher fish. Or muryas, chayshinan aided the dimei muryas ikarim. Muryas as well, says Rashi. It's really expensive. You know, caviar, if I may. It's not really caviar, but I'm just, you know. It's really expensive. And by the moryas, the concern is that what the guy's going to do is that because it's so expensive, he'll cut it a little bit. In other words, he'll take out some of the moryas, he'll replace it with a little bit of wine. So when it comes to the tzir and moryas, so that explains Rashi is why. If a kusi were to transport it, I'm not really worried about these things. But if a goy were to transport it, so then we're worried about him swapping it out with either other tzir or maybe diluting it with a little bit of wine. Okay, that's Rashi's explanation. In the meantime, where are we right now in the Gemara? Pretty much, we haven't drawn a conclusion. There's still a little bit more to go in terms of wine, but for the time being, wine talk now has come to an end. The Gemara over here now introduced us to the topic of Stam Yenam, wine that was handled by a guy. Again, wine handled by a guy, the concern is Yain Nesach, therefore it's Asr Bachila and also Asr Bana as well. And various discussions in the Gemara of not only the Gzer de Rabban of Stam Yenam, but also the Gilui, the issue of Gilui, which is also in the time of the Gemara a serious concern regarding the wine. And also preventative measures that we can do in order to ensure that the wine was not handled by a guy, that the actual physical wine was not handled by a guy. It's clear from the Gemara, by the way, that if the barrel itself was handled by the guy, so that itself doesn't pose a problem, is that if the guy were to open the wine and put his hand in the wine, so then now the wine is going to be rendered into Stam Yena. Really interesting, by the way, if I may share, the Gemara is very clear that if any wine is handled by a guy, so then the wine is now rendered Stam Yenam, and it's Asr Ba'achila, and it's also Asr Ba'ana. That became very clear. The Ashkenazim, right, the Ramah has the following psak, and that is that if wine is handled by a guy, it's Asr Ba'achila, but it's not Asr Ba'ana. So it's a really interesting psak by the Ramah. Why is it not Asr Ba'ana? In other words, the Gemara says it is. So the Ramah writes that Bizmanenu nowadays, and I'm saying, you know, I'm going back to 16th century Krakow, so Bizmanenu nowadays, our goyim are not that religious individuals. They don't really use the wine for their religious practices. And so therefore, the Ramah writes that it's not it's only going to be Asr Ba'achila, not Asr Ba'ana. Right? How the Ramah can make that kind of shift from the Gemara to, you know, to his days, in of itself is an interesting discussion, but that's what the Ramah writes. And obviously the Ramah is very, very important, very critical, because he writes, you're handling non-kosher wine. So are you allowed to sell the wine? Meaning if you're given a bottle of non-kosher wine, can you sell it? So according to the Gemara, the answer, of course, is no. It's Stam Yenam. You can't sell it. You can't drink it. And you can't get benefit from it. But if you follow the ruling of the Ramah, so of course you can't drink it, but you can sell it. So anyway, just a really interesting interesting development in terms of what happened to the Isser of Stam Yenam. Yes. In terms of the sealing of the food to make sure that it's kosher, yeah. In other words, the seals come from here. The Agamar is talking about sealing of the food to make sure that it wasn't tampered with. Okay. The heating of the food is a different issue, but okay. Anyway. The Gemara in Chulin says that the mitzvahs they do keep, I don't have a running list of what they do and do not keep, but the Gemara says that what they do keep, they keep with a lot of concern and a lot of regard. And whatever they dispense with, they pick and choose.
They don't mash in favor.
Right, right, they're right. The Gemara, right, correct. Okay. where are we right now? An interesting juncture in the Gemara. We'll start this Gemara right now. But now we're going to be talking about beer. And it's just in of itself, just as a general comment to the upcoming Gemara, really interesting where basically we're going to learn about a Gzera that was instituted post-Mishnah. There aren't that many out there. In other words, if I'm pushed to share with you the number of Gzeras that I can rattle off that are post-Mishnah Gzeras, I don't have a large arsenal of ones that I can choose from. If I'm forced to tell you another one right now, I'm not sure if I can. But here we go now. We're going to introduce ourselves to a Gzera that comes about seemingly post-Mishnah. And that is the beer of a guy. Beer manufactured by a guy. Now, what happened to this Gzera? Well, you and I drink beer that's manufactured by Goyim, so we kind of know the conclusion, but let's start with the Gemara. So, why did they prohibit the beer of a guy? Now, back then, keep in mind the following. Our beer, generally speaking, is malted from barley, hops. Back then, beer, very popular to be made from fruit. In other words, date beer back then was super popular. But in any event, it's not wine. It's a hard beverage. So one explanation of the Gemara is because of intermarriage, meaning just like bishalakim, just like stam yenam, the way Tosfos explained it in the beginning of the perek. Same thing with beer as well. Rav Nachman amar mishum gilui. So the Gemara says, and Rav Nachman says, no, we're worried about gilui. It's going to be exposed. Gilui demai. Ilem gilui denizyasya. So the Gemara says, are we talking about during the fermentation process of the beer? So ananami magalina. The Gemara says, what do you mean? During our process of fermentation, so we also leave it exposed. Meaning, again, in order to really understand, appreciate these Gemaras, we have to know what their snakes were attracted to and what their snakes were not attracted to. So as I said yesterday, and as I continue to say today, obviously I just operate with whatever the assumptions the Gemaras are. So the Gemara says that during our fermentation process, we're not worried that snakes are going to come. Snakes are not interested in beer fermenting. So the ela de chavisa, the Gemara says, well, post-fermentation process, meaning in the barrels. Ananami maglinan. So the Gemara says, again, it's not a concern by us as well. Lo tzricha ba'asra damasla maya. So the Gemara says, well, in a place where first what they do is they allow the water to settle. The settling of the water that's done pre-beer production. So the Gemara says that's a concern. The Gemara says, well, if that's true, so what happens as the water continues to age? Now, aged water, I'm admitting I don't fully understand this discussion of the Gemara, but apparently, if there was venom inserted into water, so what it would do basically is it serves like as a blocker, meaning it would not allow the beer to ferment. That's the assumption the Gemara is making. So, Alameyata Yayin Tishar, the Amarav, or Rebbe, Yashi Mutter, meaning if water somehow gets aged, so what the venom would do is the venom would prevent it from fermenting. And the same thing is true regarding the fermentation process. Meaning if there was venom there, the venom would serve as a blocker and would not allow for fermentation. So basically, once you see it fermenting, you now know that there was no venom that was introduced. So the Gemara's answer is gzeri yashin atu chadash. So the Gemara says, well, you're right. But in other words, if we allowed it to age and if we allowed it to ferment, so then you're right. So that would prove that there's no venom there. But considering the fact that they would first allow the water to sit before starting the fermenting process, so we're worried about the venom coming in. Yes, if you fermented it and you saw that it actually ferments, you know that there's no venom there. But the Gemara says, but the concern just simply incorporates Yashan Atu Chadash. Okay. It's part of the Gzera. Anyway, we're in the middle of the discussion over here. So right now, an introduction to the discussion of whether or not beer is subject to a gzera derabanan, where we can't drink the beer that's manufactured by a guy. Okay, you probably can guess where the discussion is headed to, just based on our practice nowadays. But that'll obviously, we'll finish the discussion tomorrow.